Good afternoon. You are very welcome to today's edition of Saturday with Brian Dowling. The end of the bailout. The finance minister, Michael Noonan, says we'll never be able to go mad again. So exactly how much freedom will we have? And what, if anything, have we learned from 3 years under the protective watch of the EU and the IMF? And while our immediate economic prospects have improved, what kind of future awaits a country saddled with billions of euro in debt? First, the latest news headlines with Michael Murphy. Thank you, Michael. Welcome back. This is Saturday with Brian Dowling, and we welcome your views on any of the topics we cover. And here's how you can get in touch. You can text us on 51551. Our email address is saturday@rte.ie, and our Twitter address is @SaturdayRTE. Joining us today, Brian Hayes, Minister of State at the Department of Finance, Paul Sweeney, former Economic Advisor to the Irish Congress of Trade Unions, Ursula Tipp, a founding partner with Tipp McKnight Solicitors, who specialises in inward investment, and we also hope to be joined shortly by Dr. Konstantin Gurdiev, an economist and finance lecturer. Now, most of us will probably never forget 7 days in mid-November 2010, when we listened and watched, sometimes bewildered, as the country lost its economic sovereignty. On Sunday, November 14th, on the Week in Politics programme, Minister Dermot O'Hearn was asked if the international media reports of an EU IMF bailout were fiction.
It is fiction because what we want to do is get on with the business of bringing forward the four-year plan, dealing with the budget, the first budget, which is the part of that, a very important part, and that's where all our energies are.
On the following 3 days, continuing, there was confusion and denial until a dramatic intervention by the governor of the central bank, Patrick Honohan. He phoned into Morning Ireland and spoke with Racial English.
The Taoiseach over the past couple of days has been remarkably reluctant to use the phrase bailout. Do you accept that that's what we're looking at here, that we're talking about a bailout?
Well, normally, actually, we don't talk about bailouts. When you're talking about IMF, IMF provides loans, not bailouts. The loans get repaid. So there hasn't been a bailout for the IMF. Shareholders in the IMF get the return, which are governments, get the return on the money they have advanced to the IMF.
Right, so are we then talking about a loan?
It is a loan, yes.
And you can confirm that they will be giving us a loan?
Well, if it's agreed, of course, yes.
And when you say if it's agreed, I mean, why else would they be here?
Oh, exactly. I mean, the intention is and the expectation is on their part and personally on my part that negotiations or discussions will be effective and that a loan will be made available and drawn down as necessary.
By the following Sunday, November 21st, reality dawned. The then Taoiseach, Brian Cowan, finally confirmed the inevitable.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Government Press Centre for this Government Press Conference. I can confirm that the Government have concluded negotiations with our European partners and international institutions, including the European Commission, the European Central Bank and the International Monetary Fund. We have reached agreement on a programme for the provision of significant international financial support for Ireland. A programme of assistance for Ireland totaling €85 billion has been agreed. This includes external assistance of €67.5 billion, comprising €45 billion from the European Union and bilateral loans from the UK, Sweden and Denmark, and €22.5 billion from the IMF. The estimated average interest rate of the loans is in the order of 5.83% per year based on current market conditions. The duration of the programme is for 3 years, while the average length of the loans is up to 7.5 years. The remaining €17.5 billion in the programme will be funded from Ireland's own resources, €5 billion from our cash reserves and €12.5 billion from our pension reserve fund.
Paul Sweeney, I think it can be fairly said that we've probably lived through a watershed period in terms of the country's economic and political history. Michael Noonan was saying yesterday that we'll never be able to go mad again. Are you convinced that we've learned lessons from the last 3 years?
Yes, I think we've learned a lot of lessons, but there's a lot of stuff we haven't learned. And one of the things is, why did the crisis happen in the first place? And I heard eminent historian Roy Foster speaking on RT Radio yesterday, saying it was caused by greed, gambling, political and financial corruption. And actually, you know, that isn't the case. That was a consequence. It wasn't the cause of the crisis. And the crisis was caused by extreme economic policies, far-right policies of rational expectations, of deregulation, privatisation, tax cuts, tax breaks for property investment over the productive sector, pro-cyclical policy, and the ceding of democratic power to corporate interests. And that was why we collapsed. And I think we've learned a lot. We still haven't. We're trying to regulate and grab with the banks. But I heard an eminent bank regulator from the States yesterday, Tom Honing, I think his name was, more or less saying they haven't got it right on bank regulation. So we're still in the danger zone.
Konstantin Gurdjieff, a lot of the talk this weekend is of our regaining our economic sovereignty. You think it'll be 2042 by the time we get back our economic sovereignty. Why is that?
Well, that's not me thinking. That's actually an explicit statement from the EFSF, the European Financial Stabilization Fund, from which we have borrowed the money. The last tranche of repayment to the EFSF is due in June 18th of 2042. And that is after the extensions that we have received from the EFSF and from our partners in the restructuring of our debt to them. So as a result of that, that's really when we can mark the end of the era. In terms of the actual independence, whether we will regain that independence is itself an academic question, simply because we have quite enthusiastically signed up to a host of the legislative measures from the EU, which de facto remove parts of our independence in economic matters, very strongly so. Now, whether it's good or bad, that's a different issue. And we had debate about it and we voted on that and people decided that it was a good idea. That's fine. But that's the reality of it. That's not to blame the government. It's not the fault of the government by itself. But that's just the reality. The bailout is going to be with us for a very long period of time. In terms of the cost of the bailout, outside of the immediate repayment of that, we will regain our independence when we will be able to get this economy back to the growth rates that we can expect from it, given its productive capacity. When that's going to happen is open to the debate. But by and large, there is a fairly strong consensus amongst the economists and amongst the analysts, and even the government is also pretty much in agreement with that. We're going to feel the effects, the adverse effects of this debt level for a very long period of time as well.
Minister Brian Hayes, if you take some of the points there that Paul Sweeney has made and Konstantin Gurdjieff, has the government perhaps pitched the public expectations of this weekend too high? And if you take Paul Sweeney's point, have we done enough to, if you like, buttress ourselves against another crash?
I think we've been very straight up to the public this weekend. We haven't been cracking open champagne bottles or going over the top on grandiose statements about economic sovereignty and the like. We still face a difficult position in this country. We have an enormous deficit which has to be repaired. Now, thankfully, it's coming down, but it's still too high. And until we get our taxes and our expenditure into proper kilter, we're not really out of this position. But when one compares the situation now, Brian, to the situation that faced us 3 years ago, we are in a hell of a lot better position. I think most people were humiliated by the fact that the lender of last resort had to come to this country because of the situation that pertained. Stephanie Flanders, who formerly wrote for the was a BBC economics correspondent, wrote a very good piece in the FT this week. She made the point that in the same way the politicians got it horribly wrong in 2007, 2008, in failing to understand the scale of the crash that was emerging, we equally now could get it wrong in failing to recognise the potential speed of the recovery. And we need to start changing our mindset. This, by and large, this crisis is behind us. We've got to learn lessons from it. I agree with Constant, the idea that we're going to see some rapid economic growth, that's not going to happen. What we need to see in this country is sustainable growth, growth that's based on what we produce, what we sell, and what we actually, how we perform as an economy.
But the government needs at least 2% growth next year.
That's right.
If your budgetary targets are to hold together.
That's right. And we've been cautious in setting that. I mean, there's some view that it could be even higher. You see, unlike other countries, and especially Mediterranean economies, we are much more northern European. We're highly privatised, highly deleveraged. We're quite similar to a British or German model. Our public sector is not big by comparison to the public sectors in the Mediterranean type economies. We can come back quicker because we have effectively a quite a successful private sector economy here. And we can do that if we get our cost competitiveness right. The great advantage we've seen in the last number of years is we've become more competitive, more productive. And that's one of the few policies you have when effectively monetary policy has been handed over to the ECB.
Ursula Tipp.
Yes, I would also be cautiously optimistic, okay? I don't think the fact that we came out of this bailout now, tomorrow, officially, is cause for huge celebrations. I wouldn't think we could go that far. But we can be modestly, I think, proud of what we have achieved as a country in the last 3 years. And yes, we might be a Nordic country, at least geographically, although when I came to Ireland first, one of the things which was described to me that we are the Italian of the North. So I'm not so sure how much we are different from the Mediterranean countries. But I would think that in those 3 years we have achieved a lot towards a stable, more sustainable economy. And yes, we have very, very large debt levels. They definitely have to come down. But one way how to reduce debt is also to grow an economy. And we have still a very unacceptable large level of unemployment, but it's coming down. So I would think the best thing what we can celebrate, if we want to celebrate something today, is to say that all the indicators are now clearly pointing into the right direction. And that, I think, is something in itself we can be proud of, and we shouldn't talk it down.
I think it's probably worth just mentioning the level of debt that exists in the country based on the most recent central bank statistics. Household debt is at 170 billion euro. That's 37,000 euro per head. The overall total government debt is 229 billion. And company debt has put it over 350 billion. I just want to come back to Paul Sweeney. You're a lifelong trade unionist. What kind of future do you see for the kind of people you represented over the years, given the level of debt that the country has?
Well, we've had bigger debts in the past, so we mustn't talk ourselves down too much. I remember it well in the late 80s, or was it the early 80s? But there is good news, and that's the way the employment, the way jobs have been created. Mm-hmm. That is very good news. No one expected those job figures. And if they're sustained, that's super. And in fact, I heard Eamon Gilmore speak yesterday, and he said that the government's plan next week is going to have at its core full employment. Now, in the context of where we are today, having come out of this terrible 5-6 years of pain, for the government to do that, in my opinion, is extremely courageous, and they are to be commended. And that's good news for trade unionists and for all citizens, indeed. And Gilmore said full employment can be achieved if we pursue it with the same determination that we applied to the goal of the bailout exit. Now, I'd be critical of the way they achieved that goal. But he said that the thing is, what they plan to do is not just maximise the number of jobs, but to make sure that they're quality jobs. He had another message, which wasn't in his speech, which was he wants to build a social compact within Europe, not just in Ireland, with other progressive people. And this, with the precarious employment and all the rest of it throughout the world, all the young people are not getting decent jobs. And he wants to say, we're wealthy enough to have a better society.
Over the last couple of weeks, two colleagues from the trade union movement, Jack O'Connor and, as recently as yesterday, David Begg, have both been speaking in terms of a new round of pay increases in the private sector. Now, a lot of people have mentioned how we have become more competitive over recent years. Do you see that as an area?
Well, Brian said we're more competitive, but our problem was not a loss of competitiveness. The crash. Now, one can argue around the issue of cost competitiveness, and we have got it down. But we collapsed because of bad behaviour in the banking and building speculation sector. But on the jobs thing, just to let you know, in the private sector, wages have been growing. Mm-hmm. Overall, we the trade union movement, I shouldn't use the we anymore, made settlements of 2 or 3% over the last few years, which are actually quite low, because some of those multinationals they've done deals with are making huge profits and could afford to pay a lot more. And the more they pay, the more domestic demand increases, the more shops get, and that's good for us.
Just for a sec, just want to go back to the point you made about why we crashed. Cork man Willie Slattery was one of the first people to warn of a property crash in Ireland, and he did so back in the year 2000. At that time, he was deputy head of banking supervision in the central bank, and he predicted then that if lending was not curbed, we could end up with property prices crashing by as much as 50%. He moved on from the central bank. He's now executive vice president of State Street, one of the world's biggest financial services companies. But he has also served with the National Competitiveness Council, along with Paul Sweeney, I think. And he was a member of on board SNP Nuo with economist Colin McCarthy. I spoke with him yesterday, and I began by asking for his views on the positives and the negatives of the last 3 years.
Looking back over the 3 years, it would have been very difficult to envisage that within 3 years we would be back in the markets with our bond rates around 3.5% and having escaped the programme. We have had, you know, a reasonable amount of positive economic rebalancing, significant competitiveness increases, things like property rentals, for example, for services export businesses in Ireland are, say, you know, one third of what they were at the peak. The staff are very readily available to exporting businesses. So our whole competitiveness environment has been dramatically transformed. It's also, I think, the benefit of the Troika in terms of advice on how to restructure our economy has been positive. Of all of the peripheral countries, including, you know, really major European countries like Italy and Spain, we have the lowest bond rates today. And so that is positive. However, I think for people who live and are resident in Ireland and understand the nature of our economy, many of us would say we have not used the opportunity to reform our economy in the way we should have and in the way it needs to be in the context of what I would call the long-term economic development of the Irish economy, particularly in the context of monetary union and being part of, you know, linked to the German economy and other European economies. We still have, you know, the euphoria of the last 6 months is palpable. You can see indications of us losing economic discipline already. You know, property prices and property hysteria starting to reemerge, and even albeit in a very limited way and for a short period of time. So I would say, no, we haven't used the opportunities. For example, around social welfare, we have some shocking figures in terms of the percentage of families without anyone working in that family. So we have something like 20% of families with no one working in the family, around twice as large as the next European country.
Konstantin Gordiev, is that a fair assessment of where we're at?
In part, it was a fair assessment beyond any doubts. I mean, there have been improvements, there have been gains. For example, the bond rate yields did come down. However, we have to remember that the bond yields for Greek debt came down even more dramatically than they did for Ireland. Portuguese bond yields came down quite dramatically
And we'll come back to that in a second.
There has been effects across the board there, and part of it is our credit, part of it is a credit to the general environment in which we are. Now, again, you know, if you go back to what really important...
I think we've failed
in doing that, and that worries me, because we're getting into the stage where it's not that the government wants to, but there will be effects of the fatigue of the reforms and change. And in particular, I disagree though with Willie there in terms of where the core failure has taken place. To me, it's not social welfare right now, because the biggest issue is not social welfare from my point of view. From my point of view, the biggest issue is the jobs creation and the creation of competitive environment in this economy. And for all that has been said around this table, and by Willie as well, there haven't been really deep structural reforms in the core sectors of the economy. Transport, energy, health, education, professional services. We are creating a bigger problem now in water supply, for example, by effectively enshrining yet another state monopoly with the soft budget constraints to run the sector. We have even bigger problem now in the banks, which have been repaired in a backward fashion by giving them a monopoly license to run amok across the entire economy. And these are the very deep issues, and I don't see how they can
I want to come to Minister Brian Hayes on that. The issue in relation to water, for instance, and the point that Konstantin Gordiev has made there, and the new structures in place for that.
Yeah, well, I believe the new structures will actually be fit for purpose in terms of what we're trying to achieve.
But will it be a monopoly?
Well, I'm not going to comment as to what it's going to be ultimately.
It should be a monopoly. Well,
can
it's
I pause for
water, water is absolutely vital.
Can I say something wrong, Brian?
Let's go back to the old days of
there's
the
a tendency
one
to,
voice, yes, please.
There's
which a tendency, was a very good company as a monopoly.
A lot of people 3 years ago said we would never do this. A lot of people in studios like this were constantly of the doom and gloom variety. Now, they've been proven wrong. They said we would never get out of this programme. We have got out of this programme. Of course, we didn't get everything right. But if one looks at all of the actions taken, the 270 specific actions under the Memorandum of Understanding, there has been significant restructuring within the economy. The biggest change, which I think people have not given cognizance either to the government or, in fairness, the trade union movement, has been the enormous reduction in the totality of expenditure on public sector pay and pension. The total bill 4 years ago was 20 billion euro. The total bill, as of from now, is 17.5 billion euro. 35,000 public servants have been taken out of the system at a time when there's such demands on their services. There's no country in Western Europe that has restructured itself in that way. And we've done it with the maturity, and I say this as a Fine Gael minister, and the agreement of the trade union movement. No other country did that.
Is there any particular reform on the economic front or in the public sector front that you believe the government perhaps could have and should have made more progress on over the last 3 years?
I think we've made enormous progress. The biggest reform, as I see it, is in terms of fiscal responsibility. We now have, which I think is crucial, independent, separate advice to government in terms of the fiscal council.
It doesn't necessarily follow all that.
No, we don't. No, but at least it's there. And more importantly, it has a role to play in terms of the dialogue that has to occur. The days when people questioned economists, both in government or outside of government, are over, quite frankly. Those days have got to emerge again where there has proper debate. We've got to encourage people to have proper debate about the economy.
Ursula Tip, do you think we've moved forward in that direction?
We are moving forward, but I would think we are moving forward a little bit slow, probably on certain things. And I do think we need further reform on the tax. I think there's something to give. We have to look. We are now, let's say, on income tax, one of the highest taxed countries in the world.
That's
and I
not
think
true at all.
We have to give people.
I think one of perhaps yes. if I cut across, Ursula, I think yeah. one of the points that a number of people have made is that the entry point into
the
upper rate of 52%, the margin. Of
That's
right.
a fair point.
We are one of the worst countries in that respect.
Yeah. Yes, and the main problem or the thing what we should look at is to reduce the the entry level, which is for the moment at 32,800 euro.
Once you earn above that, you
pay. Yeah, and the income tax rate itself.
41.
No, 42.
The marginal rate.
Yes,
it's 41 plus 11.
The rest is a social charge, which isn't income tax.
Yeah, but the point.
It is income tax.
Yeah,
it's a tax on work.
I'm talking now
tax
on
work. On
the income tax, and there are, the way we should give people a little bit more money in their pockets before the higher rate kicks in, because that is part of what also will give more money into the economy and will help us grow the economy.
I just want to come to Paul Sweeney just on that for one moment. At the Labour Party recently, I think Labour ministers would even acknowledge that for most people who are working and who still have jobs, if they paid a marginal rate at 52%, they don't really draw a distinction between the element of it that is the universal social charge or PRSI. They basically look at it all as being tax.
Well, then what they should do...
In terms of their disposable income.
The government should do is bring the average rate of employers... PRSI, universal social charge, up to the European rate, because it's at the lowest in Europe, except for Denmark, which doesn't have a social charge. I argued in the Competitiveness Council during the boom years they should raise PRSI so that they could lower it when we had the crash.
It's an interesting... I think it is a tremendously important debate, and I actually agree here that debate has to play out much more significantly going forward, because we have the system of taxation in this country, which is unbalanced. We tax human capital, people's skills, their ability, their aptitude, their willingness to take entrepreneurial risks and things like that, at the upper marginal rate of 55-57% if you are self-employed. It is an absolutely maddening rate of taxation when you compare it. If you put money into bricks and mortar in this economy right now, you effectively can face 0% tax through the REIT structure, which is this government put in place. And it's not to say that that is wrong, but it certainly unbalances this economy away from where the future of it lies, in high value-added services, in high value-added traded activities. But let me just very quickly come back on a couple points that the minister raised. The first one, in terms of improvement in our competitiveness. If you look at the World Bank doing business report for 2014, in terms of the getting electricity in this country for businesses, we are ranked 100th in the world. That is no improvement, material improvement, over the last 10 to 15 years. Enforcing contracts, 62nd. No reform in that area, no reform in electricity. Let's go further. Transport and Communications, World Economic Forum Enabling Trade Report. We are ranked 29th in the world again. No improvement there.
Forbes magazine,
Minister Brian Hayes,
this is actually exactly the inputs into Forbes magazine ratings.
Well, they have a different view about it. I want to say this on the issue of taxation because it is absolutely crucial.
Just on that, exactly how much scope is there to actually ease the tax burden?
I think there will be some scope, but the question is how we're going to do that. Ultimately, we've got to get tax and expenditure into kilter. But when we came to government, we made a commitment, both Labour and Fine Gael, that we wouldn't increase basic tax on work, which we haven't managed to do. And at the same time, we wouldn't reduce basic social welfare rates. Everyone said, that's impossible. How could that be obtained? Well, we have managed to achieve that thus far. We still have, and I agree with people around the table, we have too much tax on work. It is a scandal, quite frankly, that every euro over €32,800, you are taxed not at 41%, at 52% and up to 56% if you're self-employed.
Yes.
In a circumstance where in the UK, you pay at the top rate at €160,000, or in Germany about €250,000. Yeah. We've got to look at that issue because the way to get jobs back, I mean, one of the reasons why, and I heard John Fitzgerald over the week say, even for the ESRI, they were surprised at the rebound on the jobs front, is because we effectively still have a good private sector economy in this country. The only way we're going to continue to generate jobs is to stop this madness policy of taxing the hell out of people when it comes to work. That is the only way forward. We've proven that in the past, and that's why we need to broaden the tax base.
OK, we're going to take a short break now, but we will continue with this discussion on the bailout and all the issues around that in a moment. So stay with us. Welcome back. Our panel of Minister Brian Hayes, Ursula Tipp, Paul Sweeney and Konstantin Gurdjieff are still with us. Earlier we spoke about the rate of borrowing for Ireland. The dramatic fall in the cost of our borrowing over the last number of years was one factor in the decision to exit the bailout without a financial safety net. 3 years ago, the cost of 10-year money was around 15%. It's now 3.5%. When I spoke to Willie Slattery yesterday, he cautioned about placing too much reliance on this figure.
One of the things that we all have got to understand about what has happened to the Irish bond rates is that we're operating in an extraordinary monetary environment in Europe, which is historically extraordinary. I mean, historically, you're talking about 100 years historically, where interest rates are at zero. The market has been flooded, rightly so, because of the dangers which existed, 2 years ago about the breakup of the Eurozone, the connectivity of banking systems and the sovereigns. But the ECB has flooded the market with liquidity. And those conditions have created extraordinarily favourable conditions for government borrowing throughout Europe. So, for example, short-term German government borrowing is sort of 0.1%. And, 10-year German government borrowing, something like 1.5%. And so our rates are based off those rates. And one very big danger is if and when that reverses. But all of the countries that, with the economic doubts over them, Italy, Spain, Portugal, etc., Ireland, all have dramatically benefited from this extremely benign European monetary environment. But the other point, Brian, is that, I mean, if we think that our economy has been in that period of 4 years, that the borrowing issues and other issues that we have been completely addressed, that is absolutely not the case. We've got to all understand that we still have an enormous continuing vulnerability that we have to be extremely conscious of and very disciplined in how we run our economy against that context. So we're very reliant on what I would call a continuing benign environment in Europe. The second very important element is that we ourselves have to continue to exercise economic discipline in terms of the budget in 2014 and the budget in 2015. We're still borrowing something like, you know, 7% of GDP, 8% of GDP. And what's very important, Brian, it should never be lost in this discussion, is that our GDP presents a favourably false view, if you understand the point I'm making, of our economy, because our GDP figure is 20% higher than our GNP, and our GNP represents more the size of our economy that's available to pay back any of the debt figures we're talking about. And the difference is caused by the activity of US multinationals in Ireland in terms of, you know, a lot of the sales that they make, they repatriate subsequently in terms of things like profit repatriation. When we have such a high level of borrowing in terms of government borrowing in relation to GDP, and in terms of private sector borrowing in relation to GDP, we've got to understand that in practical terms, the real level of borrowing is probably 20% above that again.
Just very quickly, just to mention, the full interview with Willie Slattery will be available on our website later on. But first of all, Konstantin Gordiev, how vulnerable are we to changes in Europe?
Exceptionally vulnerable, not so much to the changes in Europe, to the global changes to the interest rates, overall environment. As Willie Slattery points correctly, we're exceptionally vulnerable. There is a good bit of news there, is that our maturities of our debt currently, of government debt, are healthy. We have long maturity debt, which is good, which means that we're less susceptible to it. We're not rolling debt as aggressively as some other countries. But now we're not that far off, say, for example, from the likes of Italy and other countries which are in trouble as well in that maturity. Now, let's get to the tough bits. If you go to the historical averages for the ECB, you're looking at 2.5% to 3.5% increase in interest rates to bring them up to the level of just comparable with the historical average for the ECB. Thereafter, there are additional problems.
It's highly unlikely.
This time, Paul, I understand it will be different. However, let's not count or bank on some sort of the dreamy realization of reality and look at the reality on the ground. If the interest rates don't even go by 2.5% to 3.5%, suppose they go by less, but there is more reasons why they can go there. They can go up there because of the margins changes in the banking sector, because of the levies that the Irish government is bringing against the banks and the additional costs imposed on the banks. All of this is going to translate into the cost of borrowing. When that happens, households will be under severe distress again. Companies will be under severe distress, and the government will be under severe distress again.
It's extremely unlikely that interest rates are going to rise in the foreseeable future. It's right to be to caution that they're historically low at the moment. But the ECB, which I don't particularly like, mainly because its mandate is wrong, it focuses totally on inflation. But because of that focus, it just is obsessive in keeping inflation and interest rates down, and it's going to do so. So I don't think there's an immediate danger.
People talk about our debt levels, and they're right to highlight the fact of public and private debt in this country is enormous. We have an enormous debt mountain. We all know that. But it's not just in Ireland. I mean, the average debt to GDP ratio across the 28 member states of the European Union is 98% at the moment. When I attend these meetings with Michael Noonan, you get all of the stats. This is a problem of debt across Europe. The difference now to the difference that occurred 4 years ago is the mindset and the policy instruments of the ECB are fundamentally different in terms of the interventions they've made.
And we have reserves as well.
And significant reserves that we have. Actually, if you take away the 20 plus billion we have in cash deposits, it brings down by about 15 basis points our debt to GDP. Difficulty that is there.
What you mentioned there at this point about the ECB, that there's been a change in the way in which the ECB goes about its business. And the point that Willie Slattery made there was that the ECB has flooded Europe with money precisely because of the risks that were there. But presumably that can't continue indefinitely.
But that's the policy instrument they've decided to follow. I mean, they've also rightly asked EU governments and leaders across those governments to make sure that banking union across the 6,000 plus banks that exist within the European system come into proper kilter as well. We're slowly but surely putting the federation, if you like, which should have been in place when the entire euro was established. Those policy flaws have been rectified, and that's why there is more stability now.
Ursula Tipp,
Yes, if you look at this, isn't one big issue in all of this mm-hmm. exactly how much, for instance, the German government, how far they are willing to allow the ECB go? Because they do have a huge
influence. Oh, yeah, and there's a huge, well, there's a long-term risk, because for the moment, yes, interest rates are at extremely low levels, and they're most likely to continue. Let's say if we look at a 24-month horizon, they're going to stay at those low levels. But we have to be mindful, us here in our very small economy, that they can go up at one point if certain other economies are overheating. Because, you see, we are not in any danger of that here in Ireland, and the weaker economies, but we have stronger economies in Europe. And once certain other markets around the world pick up, export economies like Germany could go extremely strong. And then at one point, the ECB could well take the view that interest rates have to raise again. And so we need to be careful in this country, I think, not to bank on it that forever Correct. They will stay that low. So we need to now already look into the policies. What are we going to do within the next 24 months?
The point is made by S&P, like if the current rate of 10-year money was 3.5%. That actually is lower than the average rate across the last 10 years. And that is because of the historic circumstances that have emerged. And I fully agree with you. I mean, 10% of all jobs in this country are related to whether we can export to Britain. Mm-hmm. Britain is likely to grow at over 3% next year. That'll be good for Ireland in terms of our ability to
Paul Sweeney,
into that market.
What kind of economic strategy do you think the government should be focusing on, particularly in terms of our potential exposures and potential vulnerabilities?
The fundamental economy in Ireland is pretty good. It's the banking sector and property that's in trouble. And construction, it probably overshot, and it's coming right at the moment. So there's, you know, the basic thing, and a lot of people, one of the reasons there haven't been riots is a lot of people have held their jobs and got little pay rises, or the pay cuts haven't been too high. I mean, the government is right if next week they focus on jobs and quality jobs. I think the next thing it should do is deal with equity. The national income throughout the world and here in Ireland going to people who work either as employees or self-employed are getting much less of the cake throughout the world, and this has been the case for the last...
Is this essentially because there's a smaller cake, by and large?
Oh, no, the cake, we're talking, no matter what, the cake actually was growing up till recently, 5-6 years ago, every place. There's been this huge phenomenon that the richest people and corporations are taking more and more of national income. And this is a severe problem. It's one of the reasons for the collapse in 2008, because there was insufficient demands. What are corporations doing? More and more, they're buying back their own shares. They're not investing in creating jobs and so on. It's a very serious issue. It's been dealt with by the OECD, ILO, all those big organisations. But of course, they're not coming up with real strong solutions because it is so radical in dealing with that. So the real thing is, if you're looking for jobs and economic policy, think on equity and fairness.
Konstantin Gordiel.
Well, I agree in a lot of what was just said there. There is a very big issue of the reallocation of wealth and income across the world. Much of that has been driven by the monetary policies around the world, and in particular by the Fed, by the Bank of England, and now increasingly also by the ECB as well. The quantitative easing in all of its different forms have contributed to appreciation of the risk assets, speculative purchasing of those risk assets. Some would say we're developing internationally or globally some new bubbles in that area. I'm not going to comment on that, whether it is or not. That's not even the point, but there has been reallocation certainly of the purchasing power and of incomes across the board.
For
we have to address that.
Constantine, for the ordinary family or individual who's working, who's a middle income earner, what kind of expectations do you think they should have in respect of their disposable income over the next 5 to 10 years?
I think anyone who is working within the domestic sectors was going to experience the pressure and is going to experience the burden of the changes that will have to take place. We're going to have to reorient income of people and their job security and their tenure in the jobs as well, directly more closely to their skills and to their productivity and things like that. We have not done it in many domestic sectors. In some we have done that, in some we haven't done it. We're also going to have to, and people will experience more uncertainty because a lot of job security is going to disappear. And this is nothing that the government can do or cannot do. This is just a global trend in terms of the types of the jobs that are being created. It doesn't mean that people will become more unemployed, but rather that people will be changing employers more frequently. We have to move towards a society which is treating people as their skills and their capacity to contribute to value added and pricing that more directly.
Minister Brian Hayes, for a lot of individuals and families, the big change for them over the last number of years has been the extent to which their disposable income has shrunk. Many people would say that is one of the big factors why the domestic economy is still so slow to move. But that's not going to change radically in the short term, is it?
Well, we hope it will change over a period of time. While all the macroeconomic numbers are in the right position and the economy is moving, people haven't felt it on the high street yet. Mm-hmm. But going around the place, I think there is increasing confidence that we can get there. It's this, I think, incremental progress that we need to make. I agree with Constance when he spoke about job insecurity. This is a major problem. It's not just in Ireland. It's going right the way across the world. But what we've got to do is to ensure that business startups, entrepreneurs, enterprise, that has to be the culture we've got to go after. 60%, Brian, of the new jobs that have been established in the United States of America in the last 3 years were established by businesses that weren't even there in 2008. And we have got to foster that same pro-business culture across the European Union. We're behind the United States in many respects, but we're in a good position in Ireland because we have actually a pro-business environment. We need to really cash in on that. And we've got to say to kids in school, people in college, that it's business startups that are the future, not relying on big corporates.
Ursula Tip, yes. You specialise in inward investment. Yes. Do you see signs of people being willing to, even in small ventures, to invest more, to take chances setting up businesses?
I think when I compare it, and I'm nearly 20 years in business, and when I compare what I saw, let's say, in the period between 2006 and 2008, where a lot of people were just closing down what they were doing and no new interest. Now there are a lot of people coming and saying, look, we have this little idea. We are thinking of maybe setting up. Can you do us a shareholder agreement? Oh, absolutely. There's a renewed interest. And it's actually interesting that people from the construction industry, it can be also from industries which now for a few years were in a very difficult place. And that's why for me, this Forbes rating, which I understand and other people around the table might not like, but I still like the good news story in it, that we are, for the moment, they are voted best country for business. And yes, even if it's a little bit over the top and maybe we're not the best, we are the fifth best, we're still very good. So we have to see, and we have to nurture that. We have to nurture and give people confidence that when they have an idea, that they go for the idea, that government, that other people are supportive, that people are not afraid of taking risk, that yes, if they're out of that one job, that even if they fail with their new business, that they can start another one. We need to come to a more positive thinking, because otherwise we will fail. And that's why I think that's the most important thing.
We're going to take another short break, but we will continue with this discussion after that break. Stay with us. Welcome back. Minister Brian Hayes, Ursula Tip, Paul Sweeney and Konstantin Gurdjieff are still here with us. Now, tomorrow night, the Taoiseach will address the nation on our exit from the EU IMF bailout. And our reporter, Louise Denver, has been asking members of the public what they would like to hear the Taoiseach say tomorrow evening.
I'd like him to tell us the truth to be told this time, not like the last time.
I'd like him to address the parents and graduates of this country at this time and tell them clearly whether there's a hope for them to get employment to this country or not, and tell the truth about it. Don't be playing around saying, well, we have another 70 or 80 jobs. We're losing jobs in this country at the same time.
I would just like him to be fair with the people. They have been penalised so much for all that has happened.
And Enda's going to be giving
yes,
a lot
yes, yes, yes. He can't wait for us.
I'd rather he didn't make it. I really don't. I mean, what can he say that's
not going to change? I think it's going to change. Yeah.
I don't know what I'd like him to say. You know what he's going to say. Like, he's just going to say that we're great and we're on the way to recovery and everything's going to be grand. But I suppose it'd be nice if he was a bit maybe more realistic and maybe said what they were actually going to do instead of just saying, you know, that they're going to do all these great things without actually specifying what's going to be done.
For a start, thank the people of the country, because they're the people who bailed all the bankers out. I hope neither of them try and take credit for what basically the normal people of Ireland have suffered to do.
To give the country a bit of positivity, just to not look back and look forward.
I'm just happy that they're recruiting the guards now at this stage. So,
are you a guard?
Not yet, but I applied. So.
I suppose I'd like him to say that there was a good chance that people could look forward to a kind of a better lifestyle, and that ongoing into the future, a lot of the corruption that was around would be prevented by better laws and things like that.
That things will improve, certainly, for most people, because people are really suffering. You can see it all around the place.
Okay, the views of some members of the public. Just before the break, Paul Sweeney, you wanted to make a point. Perhaps we'll make that and then pick up on just what you've heard there.
Okay, yeah. On the enterprise policy, a book is being launched by TASC, by Sean Sherlock, next week on enterprise policy in Ireland. And indeed, I have a chapter in it, and I work out that the state is paying between 4.6 and 6.2 billion a year in aiding enterprise. A lot of it is agriculture, I should say. It's the total figure. It's a lot of money, and we wonder if we're getting value for money. So if I was the Taoiseach and I was having a thing, I'd say I'd have an enterprise commission like the Telesis report. Let's look at how we're spending and supporting enterprise. Let's look at it seriously, because, you know, if you're doing reform elsewhere, do that. The first thing he's going to talk about is full employment, and I think that's really good news. And what Eamon Gilmore said, he wants a social compact with equity at the core. You know, let's curb private sector excesses, ease off on austerity. You've got to go a little easier on austerity in the next budget if you want to create jobs. We need an investment programme. Our investment levels are at the lowest in the EU, public and private. And we need to reform corporate governance in, you know, company law and all the rest. It hasn't been addressed yet.
Konstantin Gurdiev, what would you like to hear tomorrow? Where do you think the Taoiseach should be pitching the future for the public?
I think the Taoiseach should be pitching an open field in terms of the trying to have the national debate going on, active national debate with different voices, with no consensus to start with in terms of where we should take this economy and what direction we should take this economy. Paul said something which I think is very crucial. We do have this pro-business kind of culture at the public sector level and policy formation level, but we're confusing pro-business culture with a pro-entrepreneurship culture. These are two entirely different things. When you're giving subsidies to existing incumbent businesses, when you're supporting them, what you're doing is you're obstructing the creation of the new enterprise, you're obstructing the innovation of the existing business as well, and a competition between the existing business. And this is a major issue, because if you look across the board, are we good in terms of the business environment here? If you're a multinational, sure, we're brilliant. Are we good in terms of the domestic large enterprises? Yes, we are. But if you are an ambitious person and you want to start this in this country as an entrepreneur, you are facing one of the highest upper marginal tax rates in terms of your income, and you are facing no supports in terms of the creation of equity in your enterprise, in terms of the being able to raise funding for your enterprise and the likes.
Ursula Tip, what would you like to hear tomorrow evening?
Okay, I would like to hear that he's cautiously optimistic, that he tells us that, you know, the way the road to recovery is there, that he will care about the high unemployment, which we're still having, that that will come down, that he will put measures into place, and that he promises us that he will do whatever it takes to make this a better place and to continue what he's done, because he has done a good job in the past 3 years, and he's been very, very present. He has listened to what the people have to say. So I do think He needs actually just to continue on a modest positively tone. That's important, I think, because for the people who are abroad, who might think of coming back to Ireland, who from other investment companies, and they can be small. I'm not talking about just very large ones. I'm talking of very, very small companies, that they all see, yes, Ireland is a good place to be, and it's good for the indigenous companies and for the others who want to come.
I think Mr. Brian Hayes, do you expect that the Taoiseach will set perhaps measurable targets by which the government's performance could be judged in 2016 when we have a general election between now and then?
Well, it's the intention of the government, as you know, next week, Brian, to publish a medium-term economic outlook and plan, which I think is really important, and Paul has spoken about that. We need, as a country, to say what we want to do in the next 5 to 7 years and to set real targets around that. And those targets have got to be around full employment, as far as I'm concerned, because that's the best way possible to have a successful society. What I hope the Taoiseach does tomorrow evening, which I'm sure he will, is to thank people, our people who have been through hell and back, quite frankly, and particularly those people who have lost their jobs. This has been a very difficult last 5 years in Ireland, and people have gone through enormous turmoil and sacrifice. And one of the reasons I think, you know, there haven't been protests in the streets is because people remember the 1980s. They remember that decade of high unemployment, high immigration, and they want their economy back. They want the successful, sustainable economy back, which isn't built on excesses and ultimate greed. It's built on a sustainable future for their families. And I think that'll be the tenor of his remarks tomorrow.
I think we have about perhaps a minute left, so very, very quickly to the rest of the panel. I think the Taoiseach recently said by 2016 he'd like to see unemployment fall below 12%. Very, very quickly. Is that objective ambitious enough or not ambitious enough? Ursula?
I think he can go a little bit more ambitious. My prediction would be that he be able, or that we as a country are able to reduce it further, maybe probably in a single figure.
We need to do a lot more, and I hope he changes his mind and gets it down, goes for a lower target.
Constantine,
I think we can achieve a much better target, more ambitious target. We need to do it without stocking up the property market and going the old faithfuls.
Okay, that's our lot for today. Thank you for listening, and thanks to all our guests for joining us. We'll be back at the same time next Saturday for the last show before the Christmas break. I hope you can join us then. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Saturday with Brian Dowling was produced by Peter Woods. The researcher was Leslie Anderson. The broadcast coordinator, Louise Denver, and sound supervision this week was by Sheila Nivuil.